way, the last stop on this week's Whistle Stop Tour of Nanotechnological Applications is the mothership for nanotechnology. This is brilliant. A way that nanoparticles can deliver just the right amount of drug directly to where it's needed.
Yes, that's very true. I caught up with Professor Michael Saylor from the University of California at San Diego, another person enjoying the sun while we're in the snow, to find out how you can convince such tiny particles to be your drug deliverers.
So to get a material to deliver a drug, one of the themes that we've been developing is so-called mothership for nanotechnology. So we build a nanostructure that's fairly large. It's still a nanostructure, but it's large enough to hold a smaller component inside it. So we'll make these porous silicon-based nanostructures that can contain a drug. So one of the really favorite projects right now, really exciting one that I have going on, is working with a guy named Bill Freeman, who's the director of the Jacobs Retina Center here at UC San Diego. And he sees patients every day with a disease called macular degeneration. And that's a disease of the eye, typically age-related, kind of one of the main causes of blindness in older folks. And there are no drugs available that you can give to a patient as a pill and have it get through the stomach and make it into the eye. And so they unfortunately have to take their patients in and stick a needle in their eye and inject the drug. The problem with that is that there's a chance of infection. And once you put the drug in the eye, it typically these kinds of drugs will only last for a month or two before they're all gone. And then the patient has to come back in and be injected again. Bill approached me with this problem and he said, you know, the only way we can keep the drug in the patient's eye for a therapeutically useful time is to massively overdose them. We have to inject a lot of drug in the eye. If we put a high dose in, the patient's very susceptible to problems. There's a probability of strokes and other complications that come from having too high of a concentration of drug. And so he knew we were working on these little nanoparticles that had pores in them. And he said, can you put the drug inside those structures, lock it up in there, keep it away from the body, sequester it until it's needed, and then have it leach out slowly so that the level concentration of drug in the body is much lower, still above the therapeutic level, so it's treating the disease, but not so high that it does any damage. And what we are now developing are materials that can stay in the eye, at least in the rabbit eye, for 8 months.
So how does it avoid the processes that usually recycle the fluid in the eye and actually would take away the drug that they'd put in there?
If you had a material that you're putting into the eye and it stayed there even after it was being its effective time was done, after it's already delivered its drug, then eventually it's too much builds up and you're going to start occluding the vision. And so the real key thing for that was to have these materials definitely dissolve away into nothing. But it has to dissolve away slow enough that the drug locked inside is delivered in a fairly smooth and slow fashion.
So this should mean that people suffering from AMD would perhaps have one nanoparticle administered every 6 months rather than an injection of an excess of drug every month.
Well, we still have to put a lot of drug in the eye, and so it really wouldn't be one nanoparticle. We would be injecting large quantities of nanoparticles, but roughly the same volume that the doctor now injects into a patient. The key thing is just that when that drug goes into that 100 microliter injection that's going into the eye, it's not all instantly available. Some of it is locked away, and it's releasing over a much slower time period.
And when do you expect that people will be queuing up for their clinics to have their nanoparticle eyeball injections?
That's a really tough question. You know, we would like to get into the clinic within a year. We're at the stage right now where we're doing experiments with rabbits. And as you know, with any material really, but nanomaterials in particular, we want to be very, very careful that we're not doing more harm than good. So the problems that may come up, infections, longer term issues, do the materials really degrade away to nothing? Are they getting eliminated completely? There's a lot of work that still needs to be done. But you know, one of the real challenges here with a nanomaterial is even if you think it's harmless, and I'm sitting here saying, well, these are made out of silicon dioxide or iron oxide, and that's a material the body can accept and degrade smoothly. There are great examples of nanomaterials that are made of things that are completely harmless that are really nasty. For instance, carbon nanotubes, they do not degrade in the body at all. And so unless your body can eliminate them somehow, if it gets stuck somewhere, it's there forever. If you look at asbestos, the chemical composition of it is quite harmless. It's aluminum, silicon, and oxygen, and some iron typically. So kind of the same sort of constituents that we're talking about here. Why is that particular aluminosilicate, that asbestos mineral, so harmful? Because it's in a nanostructure that doesn't degrade. It's actually quite stable. Even though it's the elemental components are not toxic. When that material gets into the body, in the lungs in particular for asbestos, it sits there and doesn't go away. The body can't dissolve it. And so those fibers will stay lodged in the lungs, make lesions and cause problems. And so that's a real moral to the story of nanomaterials. It's not good enough to just say, oh, the elements are harmless. You've got to know that the material itself will go away.
That was Professor Michael Saylor from UCSD on how nanoparticles can take controlled doses of medicines directly to the place they're needed. But if we're not careful with the structures we create today, we could be storing up problems for the future.
Lifting the lab coat on the world's best science. The Naked Scientists.